Hello and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito, and we're here for episode 217 and a double dose of full interviews for you from folks who are presenting at PASIC 2020. First up, Heather Mansell, along with returning guest Dave Gerhardt, both from the Yamaha Corporation, and returning guest Alice Pan, currently distance teaching for the University of North Alabama from her native Taiwan. First up, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Hope you're all able to have a restful and pleasant holiday week wherever you're able to have it. I also hope that you are staying safe and healthy as you celebrate, either with food, friends, naps, all of that, whatever it takes. I know that a few of my colleagues have a very different holiday season as currently set up, as some of them have, due to COVID concerns, gone ahead and finished up their semester. I'm not going to lie, I'm a bit envious. Obviously, that also means that they started earlier and lost the end of their usual summer to do so, but still, I wouldn't mind being done right now. But just a few more weeks and I'll be there. Mizzou, meanwhile, will not have in-person classes for the rest of the semester. In some ways, it doesn't matter too much, as two of my classes are already online or over the internet. In other ways, it's a shift that was expected, particularly regarding percussion techniques, as we'll be conducting the final few classes over Zoom to finish out. And it's big in one major way, as Marching Mizzou has to go virtual for the rest of the semester, including the final three home football games, because we can no longer meet in person. Nor will we be playing in any of the fall men's and women's college basketball games until January at the earliest. We'll see how this all shakes out. We feel terribly for the band students, particularly those graduating and the new members, for having such a weird and shortened season. All right, let's get to the interviews for the week. First up, Dave Gerhardt and Heather Mansell. Dave and Heather are both employed by the Yamaha Corporation in their education field. Dave is assistant segment manager in marketing for education, while Heather is the marketing manager. And they presented along with their colleague, Marcia Neal, a clinic on getting funding for your program. They presented their presentation live during PASIC 2020 and had lots of great information on hand to help fellow educators know what was available to them. They talked about some of what it takes to get outside funding for your program, while also discussing how Yamaha and their lives have pivoted through this past year. On a related note, the interview was recorded before the Los Angeles Dodgers won the 2020 World Series. So that will explain some of what is discussed at the end. All right, let's get to it. We recorded this interview over Zoom on October 26th, 2020, and it begins right now. So, Heather and Dave, tell me what you are all presenting at PASIC.
My name is Heather Mansell. I'm the marketing manager for education at Yamaha, and we are going to be presenting on funding for your program. So one of the things we've done at Yamaha is really take a deep dive into our advocacy efforts and really communicate that back out to teachers, because one of the things that we've observed is there's some dots missing along the line here of what is happening in terms of funding for things like Title IV-A, for example, part of ESSA, and the information that comes to teachers and the actions that they can take to access those funds. So our presentation is basically going to be helping connecting those dots and helping teachers come up with a plan and ask for what they need to build the program.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about the CARES Act funding, which was part of the federal stimulus package that came through. And there's a lot of money that was allocated to states that is just sitting in the state's education departments. And so people need to apply for this to get this money, and a lot of people have applied. So we're going to talk about some success stories of people that have applied And we're also going to talk about, you know, just making sure that people know that money is there, because there is definitely money for technology and for distance learning and for health and safety. And so just helping them, you know, be aware of this and know where to find that money.
And Marcia, who's not on this podcast today, but she's going to be joining us kind of from the supervisor point of view. What are the things in terms of recruiting and retention? What are some of the case studies? What are the success stories that some districts and schools have had with the funding that they've received? So she's going to talk about that so that it's really easy to see what others are doing in other states, maybe even in your own state, and what the differences are. What are the different approaches that people have taken so that you can find out what you need to do to access anything that is out there and available to you. So we're mainly going to talk about those funding sources, but we're also able to take questions and for people that want to reach out to us and schedule something more one-on-one, we can do that too. But we're really looking forward to sharing what we've learned and sharing what we see out there and helping teachers access what they need.
With these, some of these funding ideas, is there just one way in to get a lot of this funding? Is it like there's one website? There's, you know, is there different paths to getting the funding? Is there different ways to set up how much money you're allowed to get? What have you all found on that?
That's a great question, Pete. And the answer is yes and no. Awesome. There is.
Hey, that's it. That's it. That's it. We don't have to sign.
That's
it.
One. Yeah. So each state is going to have, and each district is going to have different needs, and there's going to be different ways you may want to approach it. So that's why you kind of have to sit down with your fellow educators and come up with a plan. The process is the same for every state, because it's federal money that goes to the states, and then, you know, accessing that money all goes through a similar process. But, you know, the dates are all slightly different depending on the state, and the needs are going to be different depending on what you're doing. So, for example, any request that is over $30,000 requires an assessment. So, and that can be done in a, you know, it's just basically coming up with a plan. We have to assess the needs, and then the needs have to match what the funds are for. So kind of, you know, that, you know, red tape process that many people are accustomed to. But anything over $30,000 has to go through that kind of process. And you're definitely going to need to coordinate with, if there is a Title IV coordinator for your state, like if you're from a big state like California, there's somebody is definitely helping people through that process. You probably want to find out who that person is. And then if your request is under $30,000, you don't need an assessment. So you can put in requests, but you don't need an assessment. So it kind of depends on your situation. But the process will be the same. This is specifically for Title IV-A funding. It's not for non-public schools. So this has to be from a public school or a charter public school.
The other thing to say is there is an article in the recent Percussive Notes that summarizes, you know, our session. Obviously, you know, we want everyone to come to our session because there is a lot of great information. And a lot of people just don't know. There was the whole new ESSA law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, which Obama signed into law, that replaced the No Child Left Behind Act. And it said that music is part of a well-rounded education. That's why this money is available to people, to districts. But there is a link that you can follow. It's yamaha.io/PASfunding20 that has more information about the process. I mean, we're going to go over all this, but if there are people that are listening that are not members of PAS, they can follow that. yamaha.io/PASfunding20. I think you have links you can put in your podcast notes. But there's a layout of exactly how you need to follow it. And it's just asking questions and finding the supervisors that are either in the district or in the state level that will help you through this process. And, you know, the link will lead you to an article that will also help you start those steps.
When schools reach for this kind of funding, are they allowed to, do they have to specify a specific, if there, or can this be go towards instruments, let's say, Do they have to specify specific instruments? Can they, are they worried that if they only went to like computers or computer technology, that something can be, can we list the 5-octave marimba as technology? You know, like that kind of stuff. And I mean, and I'm not really kidding about that. I had a friend of mine who told me, who kind of explained some of this, years ago.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it is, you know, devil is in the details and part of any plan, right? So you want to write it down. So we will go through in our presentation sort of what the percentages are for technology needs versus other program needs, because there is a breakdown, and we'll cover that so that it's more clear. But there is an asterisk on this year in that the Department of Education is allowing all funding to go towards technology this year in particular, which can be good, but it could be bad. So you have to, it kind of depends on how you craft your ask and your craft what your program needs are. So if you're positioning it as, in order to reach more students through online virtual learning, our program needs X, Y, and Z items to fulfill this program plan, you know, for example. And certainly you could fit a marimba into that plan if it's going to help develop the program to reach and impact students. So the answer is yes. Actually, Title IV funding is totally fine for instrument needs in any way, but especially for technology, because on a normal year, it's 60% can be used towards technology. So anything you can actually push into the technology ask is probably a good thing, because then you'll have more left over for things that are obviously not technology, maybe like mallets or sheet music or things like that. But who knows, maybe sheet music is technology because maybe it's all digital at this point in time. But you get my point, which is, you know, instruments can be another portion of it, but there's definitely a lean towards anything that fits into technology, especially this year, because it's you can use it for 100% this year. And that was a waiver that they put on for this year, obviously, because of the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, and you have to remember that this funding is for K-12. It is just for those school districts in K-12. And, you know, there are districts across the U.S., you know, Yamaha's based out of Buena Park, so we have a really great relationship with the districts around our area. And Anaheim Elementary District, just an all-elementary district, they have 22 or 23 schools in the district, and they had no music, I think it was 7 years ago, and they started applying for this funding, and now they have one music teacher at every school.
26 new music teachers are now employed at Anaheim Elementary, not even at the high school level, but Anaheim Elementary School District.
Yeah. And this incredible. Is just, that was just part of it. I mean, they got other funding for it, but they used this Title IV funding to build a music program. And now every kid pre-K through, I think it's sixth grade, gets music because of this funding.
Yeah, it was the seed money they needed to even bring in new teachers. So even though you wouldn't necessarily want to put a teacher's salary into, you know, annual renewable funding like this, it's at least a good way to start somebody to show the program's value and its impact. You can at least use it as seed money to get somebody moved over into the other column.
And it allows them to then, the school will see the benefit, and then they'll include it in their, hopefully, like the next budget.
In the budget, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And graduation rates go up, student retentions go up. I mean, all those things that we know, you know, we're talking to this, preaching to the choir, but all those things go up, and then the district sees it, the community sees it. You know, they've got a lot of community engagement because of all the music that they offer. And I mean, and that's just one success story. You know, Marcia is going to talk about other ones across the U.S. That's just a local one for us.
I was thinking, you know, with something like this kind of funding, are you finding that maybe, okay, so a school district that's on a lower income level constantly applies for this, or this is a normal, just every year situation that they have to do? And then you have, like with this particular year, you have wealthier districts that are looking to this as a way. Has that started to creep up in this situation?
It's hard to say because we don't see you know, where every dollar is spent, we can just see large dollars, and it may go to music programs, it may go to other programs. It depends on how the district writes its request, because it's for all visual and performing arts, and obviously music fits that criteria. So music teachers can stand at the front of the line and say, this applies to me, and that's what we want to encourage all of new teachers to do.
Whose cat is climbing in with their...
That's okay. My cat. His name is Ludwig, as in Beethoven.
Okay, nice. Oh, not the drum company. All right.
Not the drum company. As in the guy.
As in the violin concerto. Yes, okay, I got it.
It's in the violin concerto.
Which starts with the timpani solo.
That's right. Yes.
Right. Good point. He's hungry. But we aren't seeing that too much. I mean, it's a good question, to talk about that. But that's why it's so important for the music teachers to talk to the VAPA coordinator, the visual performing art coordinator, and to really come up with a plan that really serves the district. This isn't one of those awarded, if some schools that are wealthier, let's say that don't have Title I, are going to take away from Title I, because it's not one of those things. It's if the requests go in and get approved, the money is there. And what we're seeing is that there's fewer requests, and the money will just go away if it doesn't get spent. So it's not a competitive grant, I guess, to answer your question. Actually, this is just kind of an interesting point about the Every Student Succeeds Act. It actually came, as you know, from No Child Left Behind, which is actually part of the civil rights movement. And the whole concept behind it is equal access to funding and equal access to opportunity. So that's the spirit of ESSA, and that's the spirit of this type of funding, is that it's not a competitive grant. It's about equal access to music and having a well-rounded experience in the educational offerings.
Yeah, and part of our job is we go to the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, and to our state capitol to advocate for this money. And, one of our colleagues, Dave Jewell, was one of the people who has been going to the U.S. Capitol for the last 7 or 8 years mm-hmm. to advocate for this money. And they, when they were talking to the senators and the congressmen to get these funds, they said that music needs to be part of it. And when it was signed into law in, was it 2015. Yeah. It was actually, stated, and this was the first time that it actually says music is part of a well-rounded education. It's not just the science and math and, but music is part of that. And it was part of our advocacy to the government to make sure that was part of it.
Mm-hmm. The STEM versus STEAM.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that work was done, from people in the music industry, music education advocates. It was a really big coalition of people mm-hmm. who really fought hard to get that detail written into the law so that we can build on it year after year after year. So now where we see our role is to help teachers understand and access it, because it is an annual thing that's renewed year over year. So it's not a one-time deal, whereas the CARES Act, which Dave is going to talk about in the presentation, is kind of a one-time shot in the arm right now because of the pandemic. But the ESSA Title IV funding is annual.
So the CARES Act still has money in it.
Well, the CARES Act, they allocated money to each state based on the title funding. So every state has, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but every state does have money. Some of it has been allocated, but some of it is still in the state education departments and it needs to be applied for so that they can make sure that they can get that money.
Yeah. So I think the number is actually something like only a small percentage has actually been allocated directly to programs at this point, and somewhere in the 90% has not been. But there's a number of reasons for that. A lot of schools and districts are waiting for budget information. There's a lot of background paperwork that contributes to those kind of numbers. But it's never a bad thing to be the squeaky wheel about what your program needs.
Right.
Right.
And Heather was mentioning about the partners. You know, we have to mention the NAM Foundation and the and NAM, and they're the ones that really put together these days, NAM and NAFME and our state organizations to really advocate for music. But, you know, NAM, they call them the NAM fly-ins, and they actually go and they, you know, there'll be 40 or 50 people that will spend a day talking to congressmen, congresswomen, you know, people of the Senate, and making sure we advocate for them.
Whole separate presentation we can make about how to do that kind of thing and become an advocate, like active advocate, which we're happy to talk to anybody about. But, you know, our presentation is really going to be about funding programs and how the teachers can build their plans towards funding their programs.
Yeah.
But we would love to ask us anything too. So we'll save time in our presentation for people to ask whatever questions they want to ask us, and however we can help.
But what's it been like for the company managing at this time?
You know, it's been really interesting to see how our company pivoted to how do we do this now. You know, back in March, you know, everybody working from home. I feel very fortunate that Yamaha was in a strong position to do that, because we had already been testing out various remote platforms because we all travel a lot. So we'd actually already been set up with pretty good platforms to use and to dial in. Almost everybody's job was able to go online. And for those that couldn't do online, you know, they were kept very safe. And the goal of the company was to keep us whole as much as possible, even with everything that's happening, and who could foresee. But, you know, we have been working from home successfully. Dave and I haven't really seen each other in person since March. I think we've had a few porch drop-offs of a couple of papers that actually needed real signing. But
and the funny thing is we live about a mile apart. I mean, we both live in Long Beach, so we're mile, 2 miles apart, and
it's so much work.
We see each other. Yeah. So we see each other every day on Teams or Zoom or
shower, you know, put on hot sweatpants. You know, these are tough calls that we're all making right now. So.
Yeah.
You know, it's been interesting just trying to, you know, connect with people. And, you know, in some ways we've had a wider audience because we've been invited into a lot more meetings and events and things we might not have been able to do or didn't exist or weren't an opportunity for us before. So we've been really, really fortunate and lucky to be able to speak to some new groups of people through our dealers and through all the different MEAs and the different events like PASIC and, you know, not just percussion, but in the winds world and in the guitar world and the piano world and in the institutional collegiate world. And we've been very lucky to be able to talk to a lot of people who want to hear from us and find out what we can do for them.
And your cat is super excited. You're always around to feed.
Yes.
Actually, same I think right now kids, he's annoyed that I haven't let him outside. That's why he's
here. But yeah, to Heather's point, you know, we've been finding ways to really connect with colleges and with dealers. Like, for instance, this Friday I'm doing a presentation for Josh Knight's school.
Missouri Western.
Yeah. About, you know, the how to be marketable and how to sell yourself and how to, you know, similar to the presentation I did at NCPP a couple of years ago. So we're able to connect with people because everyone is also looking for things to, you know, to have for their classes and to have for their students and to get out of, you know, this bubble of being on Zoom all the time. You know, it's been really interesting to see, you know, especially in the percussion circle, to see all the, oh, well, so-and-so was in my class today. Or like Mark Ford had Gary Burton in his class, you know, or Steve Gadd. And it was like, oh my gosh, you get to talk with these people that, you know, may have been just either impossible to get or too expensive. Or, you know, now we can have these conversations with these amazing people because of these platforms. So you know, while we have been at home, I mean, our offices have been closed since March 16th. There, you know, have been a couple people that have been going in the last couple months, you know, real skeleton crew. But there has been a couple meetings at our offices. But yeah, we've been, you know, learning how to connect with people virtually. whether it's Teams or Zoom, or I think I have 9 different platforms that I have downloaded to, you know, have virtual meetings.
Oh, yeah. Like what else?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So Zoom, Teams, Skype,
Amazon Chime,
GoToMeeting.
Okay.
There's a BlueJeans one or something like that. There was that. GoToMeeting, I said. There was
what's Webinar that? Jam.
Oh, Webinar Jam. That's right. Webinar what? Jam.
See, I think you're just making this up now. I know.
These are hilarious browser names that probably never were supposed to go to market, right?
Blueberry Pie. That's a new one.
Ring Central Meetings. Cisco, the WebEx.
Yep.
BlueJeans. Yeah, it was BlueJeans. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Don't forget our favorite one, Dave's Fuse.
Oh yeah, Fuse. Yes, that is our virtual phone system, and it also does conferencing.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah,
favorite or favorite in quotes.
Our very unfavorite.
Okay.
Yeah, the one we only use when someone calls us.
Yes. You never offer it as we'll use this network. No.
No.
Nice. Kind of because of the fact that so much of what's gone on has had to be virtual, obviously, over the last 7 months. What's been going on the manufacturing side? Because that can't be virtual.
You know, everybody in the music industry has the same challenges because supply chain is limited in certain areas. So, we've just worked really hard to fulfill demand where we can and work with our dealers to ship them what we have in stock and what we can get in stock. And there's just been a very, very strong effort on Yamaha's part to do the very best supply chain management that we can. It really is a world-class team that is working as hard as they can to get everything in from various places, various manufacturing locations, various warehouses. This is a global pandemic, so it's not just in the United States, it's everywhere. So it's been really, really incredible to watch the power of a very strong supply chain to see what can move across the world and when, even if it's delayed or slower. But another interesting thing that we've seen, which is a huge positive, is there is a huge demand for musical instruments right now because people are at home and they want to make music and they want to learn music. Or they want to return to music because it heals them or soothes them or keeps them from bouncing off the walls, perhaps. So what we've seen on the manufacturing side is people coming to instruments like guitar and piano, music production, improving their audio experience, getting headphones that are better than the little earbuds that came with their whatever they have, improving where they can.
You're telling me these things I bought for $10 at Big Lots is not cutting it. I'm offended.
That is a whole other podcast that we could do. We actually have some colleagues we know some people that could talk to educators about how to improve sound and how to improve the student experience too. Actually, no joking aside, there's a lot of things that that people can do to improve audio and listening to music. Shocker, your laptop wasn't designed for listening to music in a high quality way. So there are things you can do to improve the experience. So we've seen that on the manufacturing side, seeing people really pay close attention to the things that matter to them, which is music, which is a huge positive.
And we're fortunate to, work for Yamaha, and Yamaha just doesn't make band instruments or orchestra instruments. I mean, we have the full gamut, anywhere from speakers to headphones to pianos to keyboards to, even
receivers.
Even conference systems so people can have virtual meetings. It's such a large company that does everything. So we are very fortunate, and we're leveraging all those things to also help educators. We do another presentation on helping educators do their job more effectively virtually. whether it's, you know, with a little personal mixer, and how do you plug in that mixer, you know, because that's the other thing is educators aren't used to being on the computer from 8 to 5 or 8 to 3. Like, you know, we're on the computer every day unless we're traveling, right? And as office staff, you know, people not just with Yamaha, but anyone that works in an office, we're used to being on a computer, but an educator is not used to being on a computer that long. And so how can we help them do their job and make their job easier so they can actually get past of all the technical stuff so they can actually teach music? So there's a lot of resources that we have that we can offer. And then, you know, we've also put together stuff on our website, YamahaEducatorSuite.com, that there's an online resources guide, which is a really popular guide that has just a list of all the different things that are out there for educators to help them do their job better.
Yeah, it's a very curated list. I think we like to brand it as we read everything and listened to everything so that you don't have to. Mm-hmm. Here's the list.
Yeah.
Something, Heather, you said that sort of slipped in was, I think you said something like demand where it is. Like
talk to teachers where they are.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But mm-hmm. that, you know, where the company is like, you know, that the people are personally wanting instruments or new things, as you're saying, the pianos, mm-hmm. the guitars, the workstations, but probably it's not coming from the same places that it once was, right? Like it's not because obviously DCI, like all that got canceled, which I know is a huge part of what the industry does every year. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's a trend.
I think it's that in our normal worlds, there's music programs out there in the world, you know, marching activities, string orchestras, youth orchestras, things that are collective. But, you know, with people having to make, the desire to make music is still the same, even if you have to do it by yourself at home. You still want to make music and still want to make music with other people. So people are really looking into, well, what are the tools that I can do? How can I do that? And they're realizing that there are ways to do it that they might not have explored before. They might not have had the time to try. So it's really been interesting to see not only educators embrace making music virtually or finding ways to produce and listen to and talk about music without being face to face, as well as people just personally coming to music as a place that makes them happier at the end of the day. You know, whether that's just coming back to a piano at the end of the day and picking out your old books and maybe playing something. Maybe it's getting a guitar and saying, you know, I'm going to use this pandemic time to teach myself to play my favorite song for the first time, maybe. You know, people are doing that because music is something that never goes away as a desire for people to try and learn and get better at and share ultimately.
Yeah.
Right. I think Dave already knows how to play Limelight on drum set.
But we have a colleague who is part of our department who is not musical. She's never studied music before and she picked up the ukulele. And you know, every day she strums her ukulele for half an hour, and you know, she's been learning how to play ukulele. And it's you can tell just when you talk to her that she's excited about doing it, even though she doesn't know the theory behind it, she doesn't know the academic side like we do. But she's having fun doing it, and she'll even mention like, oh yeah, well, you know, we do this thing and I'm learning the ukulele part to that. So next time we come together, I'll play ukulele for you, you know? So it's awesome.
How much are you both missing the travel, or have you adjusted to not doing it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
With our family, I've got two kids, and so it's been good to be home with the kids. You know, we are home with them 24/7. So, you know, and we're all going stir crazy. You know, to some point, we're trying to get out and do stuff and do it responsibly and social.
And your kids, Dave, remember, are relatively young, right?
Second grade and fourth grade. So, okay. Yeah, 8 and 10. Okay. So. The good thing with that is they can play with each other. They can hang out together, and you know, they're both brothers, so there's going to be brotherly love. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Brother. Yes.
Right.
But you know, it, we haven't, I haven't traveled. I was supposed to go on a trip. I was supposed to leave March 12th and come back the 15th. And I ended up canceling that trip. But I mean, it is fun. It's the thing that I'm missing with traveling is going to these conferences and meeting educators and meeting people and seeing friends. And, you know, that's kind of a bummer. I mean, I enjoy traveling. But it is, on the other side, it is nice to be home. And, you know, I've been home more this last 7 months than I have been in years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And same for me. I have a 2-year-old and, you know, that is a bit hairy at times at home because she needs so much attention. She's too little to really understand what the pandemic is. And
you have a very talkative cat, obviously.
And a very, I have actually 2 cats and other one is just as vocal, but maybe not at the moment. Yeah, I think the travel is same as Dave. I don't think I would be in this role at Yamaha if I didn't like to travel and meet people and connect with people and see all our colleagues and friends at all the different events and conferences that we've developed over the years. You spend enough time in the music world, it's a small world, and you build some really great friendships, and it's always great to add to the group of people that you know. I loved coming to PASIC last year. It's such a great time. I met so many wonderful people, and I feel like a better person for it. So I miss out on those, but I know it's not forever that we're not going to be traveling. It's been a blessing in disguise to have some time at home and spend more time just doing at home things, and all this time with my little 2-year-old wee one. It's been fine. I can't complain.
It's been interesting to see all these conferences. Oops, sorry. It's been interesting to see all these conferences going virtual because, you know, PASIC is obviously virtual, Midwest is virtual, but, you know, there's 50 MEAs, the Music Educator Associations across the U.S. that are also going virtual. Yeah. So how do we connect with educators in North Dakota or in Missouri or wherever, right? How do we connect with them virtually? And everyone's got their own way that they do it. There is no... Unfortunately, there's no one set way of how MEA or a conference is deciding to do this. So one of the things that we've been working on a lot is how do we connect with educators across the U.S. Through these virtual conferences. So that's one of our big things that we've been working on the past couple months. And, you know, MEA season is coming up. January and February are like the, you know, the big ones. And we've got a staff of people across the U.S. that are our sales team that would normally attend these shows. So now they'll be, you know, at home attending these shows, quote unquote, attending these shows. And how do we, you know, make a difference and help educators and connect with them? So that's been our kind of operating or the thing that we've been really working hard on the last couple months. Along with, and Heather, I'm going to... segue to your 40 under 40. You need to mention that.
Oh, yes. We should talk about that. Yep. We've got a really cool program that's on right now called 40 under 40. We're taking nominations for program leaders, music educators under 40. So at the kind of this early part of their career. And who's doing something amazing? Who's doing something great? And we're going to do a feature in January that will feature 40 under 40 for the first year. We plan to do it every year. So that's something that we're looking for. If you know another teacher or you are a teacher and you would like someone to nominate you, we're taking the nominations through November 15th. And so if you want to find that, you just have to go to yamaha.io/40, the number 40, under 40. And you can also find that on our Yamaha Educator Suite. And I think Dave just put it in the chat, so it should be easy to find. But we're excited about that because we're excited to acknowledge and recognize teachers who are doing great things.
All right, last couple questions. One, Dave, how is Heather's paradiddles? And then Heather, can Dave find second position on a violin?
Who wants to go first?
I don't know if I've ever taught Heather paradiddles. I have taught Lisa, who's our director, I have taught her paradiddles. I actually won a bet from someone because we were at a show. I don't, Heather, you may not know this story. We were at, it may have been TMEA or maybe been PASIC. And we were at the show and someone said, hey, see if you can teach Lisa how to play paradiddles. And I'm like, no problem. And someone said, you can't, there's no way she can do it. And there was a bet. And I taught her how to do paradiddles. I mean, it's, you know, not that hard. And
there was not a speed requirement, I'm assuming.
There was not a speed requirement. It was just a sticking requirement. She just had to play it.
And
Heather can comment on my violin playing.
Second. Dave is a valiant string player in terms of effort. And I give him 4 stars for effort, A for effort. But I do get to hear his son playing the cello and the violin. Actually, both boys are playing now. That's right. So I get to hear the strains of Kreutzer 2 in the background. And I think, what was the other one that they were playing? Pachelbel's Canon?
Pachelbel's Canon, yeah.
Pachelbel's Canon.
And this
weekend coming along.
Yeah, this weekend we started Christmas music. So, because it's coming, yeah.
They can Dave find second position? I know he can point to it.
Nice. And then it's funny. I was realizing how crazy of a time this is for me to have interviewing both of you when, once again, the Dodgers are like, oh,
one game away.
I don't even want to say it because it's like,
no, don't jinx it.
We don't even want to bring it up.
We talked about this last time, huh?
Yeah, yes.
I don't want to go back and hear it because they, yeah. They are one game away. And so, yeah, my brother gives me a lot of crap because I grew up in Northern California, but I always liked the Lakers and the Dodgers because I was the younger kid. I had to be different. So, you know, my dad and my brother, diehard Giants fans and Warriors fans. And, you know, and so moving down to Southern California, I kind of felt at home because I, you know, had the Dodgers and the Lakers. And the last time that both of them won was, do you know the year?
I do, yeah, 88.
I don't.
88 was the last year that they both won in the same season. Now, all the Giants fans are all, you know, it's the asterisk year anyway, so it doesn't really count. But I think it's, you know, it was interesting to hear them talk about it last night on the telecast, how they were saying that this year was probably tougher than the normal year because, you know, all the protocols they had to go through. And everything, you know, it wasn't just going to the park and showing up and traveling and doing the normal thing. But, you know, they were mentioning how tired these guys are because of all the extra protocols you have to go through and the, you know, being away from your family and being in, you know, the bubble and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Not unlike music teachers right now. Just everybody who's really just, you know, got a lot of extra work on their plate to redo what they already do and do it better.
Yeah. And we're, you know, being in California, we've got a lot of educators that are probably going to be home for the entire year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right now, our district is through the end of January, but I'm sure that will change. It's kind of whatever LA Unified does is what Long Beach does. So, you know, it's educators are working through a tough time now, being at home, trying to figure out all the technology and teaching, and, you know, hats off to them because they're doing a heck of a job.
Totally.
And next up is Alice Pan. Alice was previously on the show in April of 2018 as she was finishing up her doctorate degree at Michigan State University. She'd been teaching at the University of North Alabama adjunct for keyboards starting in fall 2019 and has been working there in some capacity ever since. At PASIC 2020, she presented an unaccompanied work for solo voice and marimba by Josh Oxford as part of the New Music Research segment. The performance, recorded beforehand, went quite well, and the piece is another of a segment of works for voice that are becoming more common for percussionists to perform as solo artists. Alice also talked about that as well as teaching in Alabama, learning about Southern U.S. cuisine, and her COVID life back in Taiwan. So let's hear from Alice. We recorded this interview over Skype on October 27th, 2020, and it begins right now.
So Alice, tell us what you're going to be doing for PASIC 2020.
All right. So I'm super, super excited that I'll be joining the PASIC 2020, which is a virtual PASIC. That's unusual. I will be presenting a song by my friend that's combining marimba playing and the singing. So I'll be playing marimba and singing at the same time. And this piece is called Life Songs, and it's by my friend Josh Oxford. And he wrote, well, there's three pieces in this suit. And he wrote the first one when we went to Ithaca College together. And he knows that I like to sing. So he's like, hey, why don't you, you know, sing and play together? And at that time, I actually think, well, it's nonsense. No one did that. But he actually wrote me the piece, and I really like it. So we have premiered that in my recital. I think it's in the second years of my master year. And then he really likes it, and he decided to write another two to make it a suit. So now there's three songs in there. It's called, the first one is called Afterwards, and the second one is called Come Get Together, and the third one it used to call Ballad, but I think he put a new title on it recently. But it's still going to show Ballad and on the PASIC side this year, and I'll be playing the first one and the third one for the virtual PASIC. Yeah, I'm super, super excited for that.
Is there a category for what your performance? Is it part of, you know, like a focus day type thing that they used to do, or is it some, is it another thing altogether?
It's sort of like the focus day that I used to do, but this year they call New Music Research. And the topic is voice and percussion. So I think there are other two people going to present really cool pieces for percussion and voice. Some people, I know one of my friends from Hong Kong, Matthew, he's going to like speak and play, and it's going to be really, really cool.
Now, and for you, it is singing. It's not speaking and playing. It's singing and playing, right?
Right. It is singing. and it's sort of like pop music, but with a lot of really complicated rhythm, which percussionists loved it, you know? So it sounds like pop music, but if you really hear, like really try to listen to the marimba part, it's like in 7A and 6A, and it change all the time, but it sort of want you to feel the feeling in 4/4, which is cool.
Got it. How much of this kind of literature have you done before, of the playing and singing?
I have been trying to like make people write pieces for it. Josh Oxford's suit, that's the first one. And then I also have another one that I'm trying to record next month. That's vibraphone and singing. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple of friends who are trying to write pieces for me right now. We're trying to make it for like my next CD or something that's all percussion and singing.
It's still a fairly new idea for you to be putting together.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you find is the biggest challenge to try to make these work?
Well, first of all, is to find people who have the same sense of music to write a piece for you. Because I talk to a lot of composers, and a lot of them, like they all want to write pieces that's cool and that's like new, but not a lot of them understand that what I want or what I like is to focus on the music itself instead of doing a lot of, you know, really hard stuff to like challenge my technique or my brand. So it can be hard, but I always talk to my friend that, hey, it can be really hard, but I want it to be at least nice or meaningful for the audience. Like, we don't want people to hear just a lot of notes or really fast 16 notes all the time. We want them to really feel something from the music. And I think that's the first thing that that I see when I talk to composers. And the second thing I find it really hard is when I'm learning the music, I have to think myself, I have to take myself apart, basically. I have to be the marimba player that's play everything like how the percussionist speaks, like our music language. And it has to be also really musical. It's not just sound and accompaniments. And also the singing part, I want it to sound like a singer. And also I don't want them to, when they put together, I don't want them to have to fight together, or I don't want them to sacrifice any part. I want them to put together and sort of like one plus one is bigger than two, you know? Yeah, so that's always the things that I find myself, well, I can say struggle because I really like it. but I do put a lot of time in making this happen.
You like the challenge, it sounds like.
I do like the challenge.
When you are in the midst of working these pieces up, do you find that you are, that the strain, or, you know, that the biggest challenge is the, that making sure that like your singing is, you know, is either in pitch or you're not losing breath or you're, you know, like all the things that a singer would have to think about. And then you're also still having to physically move your arms and legs to make the marimba part move. What of those things is do you find particularly challenging?
There's not so many examples. Well, first thing is, we move a lot when we play marimba because marimba is so big. So when you have to run around the marimba, like when you have to run up and down all the time, usually it's hard for me to sing. So I have to like practice to sing without people hear that I'm really tired or I'm out of breath when I'm like going up and down on the marimba. But also usually, well, all of this piece are by, you know, my friends, and we work together to make this work. So usually I'll talk to them, and most of the time they will take the stuff out or they will do a little bit rearrange for that. So that's really nice. And if they think that has to be there, like the marimba part has to be there and the singing part has to be there at the same time, you know, we as a musician, we have to just deal with them, practice on it, which is doable, I think.
The good news is it sounds like your rapport, your friendship with them is such that you can say, do we really need this spot? Like, can we take that out so that I can actually do the singing, or, you know, there's enough of a,
yeah,
back and forth, I guess, on that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm lucky to have a lot of composer friends who are really nice and easy to work with. Yeah, they are. Usually, they'll talk to you, and like it's really cool when two people or more people get together and just want to make a good piece out of our soul, you know, so that's really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, and it's beneficial to the composer to, for if they want their piece to come out well, that you can perform it well, and thus don't be upset if I say this needs to go, right?
Right.
Tell me a little bit more about your singing background. Is it this just something that you have liked to do, or did you do more? Have you been involved in singing as something that you've done in your life?
When I graduated from my undergrad in Taiwan, I took 1 year off before I went for my master's degree. And that year, I was pretty bored. And my friend and I made a cover band. So, and I, of course, I'm the vocal. And we sing in like pop and, you know, McDonald's restaurant and stuff, to just have fun with it. So that's the first year that, well, I like to sing when I was little, but that's the first time that I'm like really practice singing and try to sound good, you know? And I was really, really happy. And I found myself really happy to sing. So when I went to my doctorate degree at Michigan State University, I took vocal as like the election degree, something like that. Like we have to elective degree. Okay. Yeah, so I took I think 4 semesters or 6 semesters of vocal lessons. I actually have to come back to Taiwan and have no gig, so my friend and I made a concert that's band and singing again this year. So that was really cool. We want to make it like a every year thing, just to take a little bit, you know, really strict and pressure attitude towards music, to like really relax and just have fun.
Now with that, you know, the cover band that you did, was that like all the world's pop music? Was it pop music specific to Taiwan? What were you covering?
Oh, we did a little bit English songs, and we did, well, mostly it's Taiwan pop music, and we did sing a little bit K-pop.
Yeah.
And songs from anime, and we sang some of the Lady Gaga piece, which I really like. We also sing Zombie by Cranberry.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. That was really fun.
Yeah.
Basically, we just like pull off all the songs that we really like and see which ones fits the concert.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, for PASIC, is the have you already recorded what you're gonna do, or is that okay?
Yeah, we already did that.
Okay, so that's good. So you just hang out and enjoy your own performance when it plays.
Right. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I think I had you on, I want to say almost 2 years ago. I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So you were. And are you still, like, I know that this past fall 2019, was that when you started at North Alabama?
Yeah.
Okay. And are you still doing that?
Yes, but this year, because of, you know, everything's changed so much. Yeah. I'm stuck in Taiwan right now. So I took 1 semester off, and I'm hoping to start at Alabama next semester.
Tell me about that first year of getting to teach at North Alabama.
Well, that was really, really fun. And it's so different for me, because I was, you know, a student for almost the entire my life. Then after a couple of months, I have to teach other people. So that was a huge change. And of course, I was a little bit struggled for like moving into a new area and also getting my new job working. But for like the teaching part, I really learned a lot, which surprised me. That by teaching so many college students, I actually see a lot of things that I'm bad at. You know, and I'm always telling people, hey, you have to do this, do that, and it's good for you. And when I practice myself, I realize that, oh my God, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
You know? So it actually helps me to, you know, look back how playing is. I always feel like I'm growing with my students, which is a really nice feeling. I'm not just, you know, giving to people stuff. I'm also take back a lot of stuff from them. And the students in UNA are really amazing. They are, oops, that's my sister. Yeah, they are really smart and they love to learn. I was really, really surprised how much they can, you know, improve in one semester. And there are also a lot of them that's like, I can't play like them when I was an undergrad student. Mm-hmm. You know, so teaching them is fun, but it's also very challenging, that I have to always think what is good for them as like a player, performer, educator, and or like whatever they want to do in the future. So that's challenge, but also fun for me. And the culture is completely different than, you know, in New York and in Michigan. So that's also another the fun part. The accent, it's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. When I first went there, I was actually really hard to understand some of the people talking to me. Mm-hmm. So that's like, oh no, what should I do? But it's good that after like a couple of weeks, I sort of know like what they're talking about and like how their accents work, which I really like their accent. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds fun and friendly. It's just cute. Yeah. So that's the cultural shock for like when I face my teaching. That's like the thing that I have to like, uh-oh. I have to really understand what my student's saying, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes sense. If you're in New York and Michigan, that's one type of accent that you had to adjust to. And then, yes, the South. And you're in the Deep South, too. So it's...
Yeah.
But what is it like? Because that program is big. I mean, that, you know, particularly the percussion side with all Tracy's doing, and the kind of range of stuff. I mean, what's it like to be among so many other, you know, percussion professionals?
So what we did in UNA, I think is really, really cool and makes so much sense for, you know, a percussion program. Because what we did there is to have Tracy and me, we're basically teaching, well, he's teaching drums and I'm teaching keyboards for like the junior and senior students and some of the sophomore students. And then we have another professor that's teaching like basic stuff for the freshman and sophomore, which is really, really nice to help them like have really strong base for all the percussion playing. And we have another faculty, we have like the jazz vibraphone professor, we have drum set professor, we have I think two world drum percussion that's teaching like two different categories. So the student can really learn from like the you know, professional, really professional of the instruments. I think that's really, really nice because look back from my education, we learned everything from one professor or two. You know, of course, they are great and we learned a lot from them. But like I can't play jazz vibraphone because I don't have someone who has this experience to tell me what to do. And I can't play a lot of world percussion because what we learn is just, you know, hand drum is like this three technique, and if you got it and you can sort of play it, but we actually can't, you know, like we can fake it, but if you are going to get gig, you can really play like the, you know, the really African drumming or stuff like that. So I think it's really, really good to prepare our student for like whatever they want to do. And since percussion is so wide, and they can also decide when they like learn so many different things, they can also decide what they really love and what they want to do in the future.
Did you find yourself either sitting in on some of the jazz vibraphone or the hand percussion just to kind of, you know, expand you some of your own knowledge on these instruments?
Yeah, I did not like sitting in the lesson because some of the lessons are online, like the jazz vibraphone. They use Skype and stuff to teach. But I do like hang out with the students a lot in the practice room and just see what they're doing and, you know, learn a little bit technique, hand drum technique from them and stuff. And if I have the chance, I do like to talk to other professors about, you know, their professions.
Did you go to any of the marching band stuff?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. And I really like, well, I love marching band. I always want to do it. I also always want to try it, but I just, you know, don't have that opportunity to do it. And in UNA, I can really like see people practice it, and I see how they train their students, and I see how the pit works, which is cool because we don't have that in MSU. I do go to some of the GIMP with them. That's really cool too, and I know like I can see what they actually do during the GIMP. That's really cool.
Partake in any of the cuisine, the Southern cuisine?
Oh my God, yeah. Again, it's so different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a lot of fried chicken, which is bad. Okay. Yeah, but it's really delicious.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they have like they have, well, this thing really impressed me. You know, they have white buffalo. What's that called? White buffalo chicken sauce. It's okay. White. And it's sort of spicy, but it tastes really weird in a good way. Like, I like it. It's uh-huh. Really, really rich.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know what they put in there. And I don't know how to describe, like, how I feel, like, how it tastes like. But it's good.
Have you had either grits or biscuits and gravy?
Oh, my God. I love grits. It's so good. It's amazing. And I still don't know what it is, but I really like it. Yeah. There's a restaurant in town. They have like grit and shrimp. That's my favorite.
Shrimp and grits. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. Oh my God. I miss that.
You haven't tried the recreated in Taiwan?
No, because I have no idea what that is. And I actually never seen that before.
Mm.
That's like the weird thing, because I think in Taiwan, people like to eat. People like to eat like different food. So they will like take Japanese food and make it, you know, Taiwan flavor. They'll take Korean food and like make it something else. And you can basically eat all the food from around the world in Taiwan, but I never seen that in Taiwan. Like, I never heard about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that? Like, what is grit?
So, yeah, I'm like the wrong person to ask, because my wife is from North Carolina. So she grew up with it. It's butter, and I think it's some corn and some other stuff, but I can't eat it. Like I just can't do it.
Really?
It wasn't my thing. It was just too much. I think it's too rich, or I don't know. It just wasn't my thing. Yeah. And there's shrimp and grits, there's cheese grits, there's other kind of combinations, I know. But it's just not my thing.
The one in the downtown UNA.
Well, I need to get to that place then.
Visit us.
Fair enough. I'll work on it.
All right, sounds good.
You just tell Tracy to have me down, and I'll be more than happy to try it out.
Yeah. All right. I'll tell him that.
Okay. just on a related note, then, because I don't know the answer to this. Like, because you said like Taiwan takes can like bring something in from another, like if it's Korea or Japan, and make it like a Taiwan. Does that mean that there's like a spice? Is there an, like, what's like kind of that ingredient for Taiwan?
Well, I think what they do is just like make it more fits the taste of Taiwanese. Like, Korean food usually is really spicy,
mm-hmm.
but not. Now, all the people like spicy food in Taiwan, so they will usually make it less spicy. They also like to, remake some stuff with like the ingredient from Taiwan. So like sushi, well, I don't know what's the English for that, but there's one fish that's like we have a lot in Taiwan, basically. And you can eat that kind of sushi in Taiwan, but they don't actually have that in Japan.
Okay.
So that kind of stuff, it's not like something too fancy, because Taiwanese, they like to try like what it really tastes like. French food, usually it's pretty just like what you can find in French. Italian food, there's like a lot of cheese, and Taiwanese don't eat that much cheese just because they are afraid of their gameplay. So they'll make like a lighter version of that.
Okay. So something that's local, like you said, like they might take something that's like a local seafood item to Taiwan, and then just put that in a lot of different dishes, that kind of thing.
Pizza is mm-hmm. from Western world. So we have, but in Taiwan, you can eat like a lot of different flavor of pizza. Like we have, Kung Pao chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Kung Pao chicken is Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
We have Kung Pao chicken pizza, and it tastes good. Okay. kind of stuff. So it's like a little bit fun for like making food in Taiwan here.
Got it. So tell me a little bit about what happened for you in March, and what happened that that you're now back in Taiwan for the time being.
I think it's hard for everyone, but what happened to me was in March, the UNA started like calling off the, well, not calling off, sorry. Everything goes online, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at that time I was like, well, I guess it's pretty serious. the virus is kind of, cause When I heard the news from Taiwan, I didn't think that's that bad. But then, the confirmed case keeps increase, and school calling off. So I started to feel like, oh, that's like pretty scary. And at that time, you know, I just moved to a new place. I don't actually have a lot of friends there. And I was already feeling a little bit, you know, lonely and stuff. And when that happened, I was a little bit dramatic. But I was actually thinking like, oh, if it's the end of the world, I want to be with my family. Yeah. I know it's pretty dramatic, but yeah. Like considering like I'm just moving to a new place, that's a little bit scary for me. So my mom and I talked on the phone, and we decided that, hey, it's pretty dangerous to, you know, take flight, but I think like we think that I should come back to Taiwan since everything's going on. I can still teach from Taiwan. So I took, I think, 36 hours of flight, like I think four flights or something. And it's the whole trip is 36 hours to come back from Florence, Alabama to Taiwan. Yeah. And
when did you make that trip?
April 1st. I left on April 1st and arrived on April 2nd.
Had North Alabama, were they like in spring break and they extended the, like, what was the school doing in that time before you head back?
I think that was spring break. You're right. Well, I think that's 1 week after the spring break when UNA really announced that the rest of the semester is going to be virtual, then I think that's the times I decide to come back.
Now I'm curious, when you flew back, were you on empty planes going back, were there a lot of people trying to get back to Taiwan?
Well, the last flight, yes, from LA to Taiwan. That flight is, well, I can say a lot of them, but considering the time, I think that was more than I thought it would be. But for the first three flights, like I flew from Florence to Atlanta and then Atlanta to Tampa. I think it's Tampa, and then Tampa to LA. The first three flights are like I can have the whole role for myself. Sometimes I have like six roles for myself.
Yeah.
So that's never happened. It's cool.
And then the last flight was pretty full.
I think it's pretty full, but they still try to keep like more space for each person. Like I personally have three seats. Like the seats beside me are all empty, and other people, unless they are like to get travel together, or they'll just like have empty seats by the people.
When you get back and then you're now teaching virtually to finish out the semester, what times of the day were you teaching?
I remember that I have to teach like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. and then 5 a.m. to like 7 a.m. something like that. Yeah. So, but when I came back to Taiwan, we have to be like completely quarantined for 14 days. Like all the people come back have to, stay away from people, and it's like pretty strict. Like my parent has to leave the house and just leave the whole house for me for like 2 weeks. So it was okay because I can't go anywhere. So I'll just like stay home and sleep in the afternoon, teach at night. So that's pretty okay with me.
So you just basically adjusted to make it so that the students, at least the North Alabama students, didn't have to change their schedule very much. You just adjusted for yourself.
Yeah. they still like change a little bit for me, which I really, really appreciate. But yeah, I try to like, you know, stay awake at night, which is okay.
I'm trying to remember is Taiwan doing all right in terms of the kind of the virus just generally?
Yeah. Taiwan is doing all right. We basically have our normal life back in like May or something, but everyone still have to wear the mask if you are taking like public transportation, and some of the buildings still require you to, you know, wear a mask, and all the restaurants and most of the place you have to check your temperature before you entering the places. So other than that, life is normal here.
Are there restrictions in terms of amount of people that can be in spaces or no?
No, they canceled that. It used to be like 100, but I think they canceled that back in July. Yeah, I think back in July, because my singing concert, mm-hmm. That was in September, and we have like more than 100 people, and that's fine.
Live concerts, what a concept!
It is a concert. I know, it's crazy.
So great to meet and talk with Heather, while also catching back up with both Dave and Alice. I wish them all the best for the rest of the year and going forward in 2021, whatever that means. All right, this week's rave is the classic 1988 film The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, starring Leslie Nielsen, George Kennedy, Priscilla Presley, and Ricardo Montalban. I recently caught this movie again for the first time in a long time. And it's made by the Zucker-Abrams-Zucker trio that are responsible for other famous spoofs like Airplane, Top Gun, the Kentucky Fried Movie, and many others. It stands to reason, as it does with many comedies from the past, that there simply are aspects that are just not funny anymore. There's a couple of scenes in this movie that involve some pretty terrible sexual assault humor, and the movie cast includes O.J. Simpson. You know, the less said there, the better. But after that, holds up pretty well. It was always amazing that the filmmakers essentially rediscovered Leslie Nielsen in the 1980s for these spoofs and made him a star for the second time. Nielsen was a dramatic actor from the 1950s and 60s, and his no-nonsense, dry demeanor made for saying and doing silly things with very straight and perfect serious timing, incredibly amazing. While there's a lot, again, that's pretty hilarious, there's two scenes in particular that stand out. The first one, which I did not remember at all, involved a turn on the classic, give the informant witness money and they have you give clues for how to solve your crisis. They did this and there's a great turnaround in the scene that I just found amazing. The second one, which I'd seen here and there out of context, but hadn't seen in context in a long time, is the baseball scene, which features Leslie Nielsen as a dancing umpire. It's awesome. There's not too much else to say here other than the movie is still a lot of fun and quite amusing. So if you haven't gotten to see it or it's been a long time, check out, again, The Naked Gun. And that's our show. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment and a rating. You can always find all of the episodes and the show notes at the homepage at petezambito.com/ Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. This show is also on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast locations. If you're on Facebook, like the page Pete's Percussion Podcast. You can find me there on Instagram and Twitter at Pete Zambito or by email at PetesPerkPod@gmail.com, and I'll catch you next time. Happy Thanksgiving again, and we'll see you soon.